What have you done now?
And he joins me now, and we've already had a pleasant conversation off air, so we might as well have an even more pleasant conversation on air. PJ joins me right now. PJ, how you doing, man?
Brad, it was an okay conversation, if I'm going to shoot you straight. No, I'm kidding. It was a 10. You're very good with the pre-banter. So all you fans out there of Brad Gilmore, live ESPN Radio, they should know he does a very good pre-banter, talks about his family and his drug problem. So
Yeah. Well, I just want to put it out on the table. You know what I mean? If you're going to do it, you need to know everything about me before.
Real early with the drug problem, though. I was like, wow, we didn't even say hi yet. He goes, just putting on the table.
What's the point of dancing around the subject? You know, if we're going to talk about it, we talk about it. You know what I mean?
Opioids are a crisis. It's a crisis in America.
All are aware. We all are very aware of it. So, PJ, how you doing, man?
You hurt your shoulder, and you said, give me a little something.
It was the thing, the golf course. It was the 18th hole. I really wanted to get that, you know, eagle, and I just couldn't pull it off. And you know what? I overextended myself. I ended up like Tiger, and here we are now. We find ourselves in this predicament. But, PJ, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Brad. I'm doing good. I have a newborn child. I have a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old. Los Angeles now is officially the lockdown at home. Just you know, hang out with your immediate family, which is great. But we actually Hollywood, we're still working because in Hollywood, because we test so well. So you get a test 48 hours before you show up, and then you get a rapid test the day of. They have different sections, so I weirdly feel even more safe on set than I do in my own home. If that makes any sense.
It does. Now, have you gotten used to the COVID test? Like, does it gotten used to it? Because every time I have to get the one, I mean, the eyes are still welling up. I'm sneezing like crazy. It's awful, right?
I've done, by the way, I think I've done every single version possible. I've done the brain scan up the nose. I've done the levels.
The swirl.
The nostrils. Yeah, the swirl. I've done the mouth, everywhere in the mouth. I've done the spit test. And I've done the one where you gotta get totally naked.
That's the preferable option.
I just want to talk about that one. I was naked, it felt really, it was just inappropriate. It was inappropriate. But weirdly, I haven't had the naked test just that one time. It was just that one time.
Yeah. What was it? You know what? We'll get into it later. I was going to ask more about it. But you know what? We'll talk about it. You know, it might be connected to the opioid thing. So maybe
That was the guy. The same person said, he's like, I have an opioid problem. But let's let's test you for COVID. I'm like, he's like, just, you know, unbutton your top two buttons, and then we'll just see what happens. And the next thing I was naked.
Yeah, it happens normally that way.
That's how the COVID test usually goes down. I mean, it's a hard time for everybody. Let's be honest.
It really is. Yeah. It's rough. Well, I mean, it's also a rough thing to be a father of three young children and to be successful in Hollywood. I think it's what is more difficult, being a good father or successful in Hollywood?
Maybe the greatest question ever posed to me.
I like it.
ESPN Radio.
I like it. Yes.
Wait, what do you say? Before I answer that question, what's your opening? Who does your opening? What is it?
I don't know who he is, but he has.
How does it go, though? How does it go? It's
just like, this is ESPN Radio, da 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 da, and you know, and you're listening to Brad Gilmore. It's the great like movie trailer guy sound.
Fantastic.
Yes. You know, it's kind of like, I'm sure for you, it's like the first time you saw your name in credits, in the opening credits on, you know, a major motion picture.
Oh,
that was a big deal for you.
Oh, huge.
First time I heard somebody with a movie trailer voice say my name and you're listening to. It was a big moment. It was a benchmark thing for me.
How long ago was that? How long ago?
7 years? 6 years? 6 years?
That's seven years? You've been doing this seven. You're a pro. You're a veteran.
I'm a vet, you know what I mean?
Brad Gilmore beat the opioid crisis so he can talk to you live. ESPN Radio.
I'm going to get some tweets, and I'm sure when my mother hears this, she's going to be like, do we need to have a conversation?
But no, I already talked to her. She's going to call
you did?
After this. Yeah,
okay,
no, there's some family members are going to be hopping on this interview, actually. This Zoom
interview. is this like an interview slash intervention?
This is the intervention. This is the one. Took 7 years. The 7-year itch didn't stop for you, did it?
It didn't. I just kept on scratching.
Well, anyway, so getting back to your incredible question.
Yes.
What is harder? Look, you know, Hollywood is incredibly difficult. Everyone who comes out here, you know, I say because I like to talk to the graduating students. I went to DePaul for grad school. I'm wearing this.
I see that, yes.
Computer school at DePaul. I have a lot of alumni pride. Boston College and DePaul. But I try to tell the kids, I'm like, you when you come to Los Angeles – or you go to New York, you want to be in the entertainment business, you're not just competing with the kids like from your city or whatever. you're competing with people from around the world. Like, people are coming from London and Australia and Japan or what have you to get the same job you want. So you have to really bust your butt. You have to outwork them. You have to do everything in your power to make sure that you are trained and ready to show up for that audition and ready to, I was like, you're ready to kill. So it's hard. And, you know, I pride myself on working really hard and being very prepared, not only for auditions, but like when I show up to work. And as a father, I'm just failing. I'm failing miserably at that. No. I feel like being a father is the best, truly is the best job. And I didn't think I was ready. You know, I was like, I'm just going to bet it all on that moment when this object comes out of my wife's body. And I'll tell you, it works. Whatever that is, and you're afraid of having kids, like, there's pre-kid and post-kid. Post-kid is so much better and magical, and it literally happens in that moment. It's this magical moment, and I'll never forget that moment. Obviously, every parent will have that, but, you know, my grandfather had passed away really the last time I was in a hospital, and it really was very – it was like, you know, it's a horrible moment, but if there's [S2] Right. [S1] Any nice way that was sort of magical – It was Christmas Eve, and it was me and my mom, and it was, you know, it's her father, and playing in the background literally was, they were doing midnight mass. The Pope was doing midnight mass in Rome, and we're Catholic, and it just happened to be on a TV, like right over his head. And literally the moment he passed away, Ave Maria started playing. So it was this really special, like very sweet moment. But [S2] Whoa. [S1] That was the last time I was in a hospital. And then this other moment, the next time in the hospital, I'm, you know, my wife is having our daughter, and wait, when babies come out, they look like little old men. And I didn't, no one told me that. So out comes my grandfather out of my wife's body. I'm like, like the circle of life, but a weird, dark, major, crazy moment. And then she turned into a little girl, and she's beautiful as ever today.
Okay, so from old man grandfather to little baby girl.
Old men come out of your wives when you have a baby. I don't know if you knew that, because they're all scrunched up and yeah.
Brad,
have a baby real soon. This is the other call post intervention to say we found a lovely person for you.
Oh, that's what
whether you want to adopt or have a child. Think about it.
That's what that 2 o'clock meeting was for. That makes more sense now.
2:35, actually.
Oh, 2:35. I'm sorry, I missed
it. It got pushed a little bit. There was one person we had for you, and they're like, I don't know. It seems a little rushed.
It happens. So it happens.
We got another person, 2:35.
Okay, cool. As long as I have potential suitors and potential mates, you know, I mean, at least I can, you know.
Well, there's one. We got one, and we're just crossing our fingers they're going to show up.
Okay, we're betting on all in black right now.
I would say red, but just so you know.
Just 6 to 1/2 dozen of the other.
Yeah.
PJ, I will say this, though.
Say it, Brad. Brad Gilmore, ESPN Radio. I can't stop saying that. I want to hear the listening guy who does
to. I will send it to you. But I am a fan of so many of the projects you've been a part of. It was maybe, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, I had Rob Reiner on the show.
Never heard of him.
Okay. No. Well, he's mildly successful in his
up and comer,
medium.
Trying to up make and comer. It into the big city.
You know, I mean, he's had a couple of things that have really popped for him, but you know, relatively unknown name. But the one thing I wanted to talk to him about was The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Cause I love the movie. I mean, it's such an incredible film, and his work in it was great, and it was fun to see this prolific director in his own right have to be directed by another prolific director. And that's what I wanted to ask you about, your work on that film, The Wolf of Wall Street. I think it might go down as a top 15 movie of all time, in my opinion. It's that good. And your work on the set, to be around that and to be on the set, I always like to know if you – because you always hear that question, well, did you know it was going to be a hit? Did you know it was going to be a hit? I'm sure when you had DiCaprio and Scorsese, you're sure that people are going to like this movie. But how did it feel working on that project?
I mean, there's a couple things I'll unpack for you. One, Rob Reiner is lovely, brilliant, beautiful. God bless that man. And obviously a pro, and as a director, I think he was just giddy to be working with Marty Scorsese and just watching and just absorbing and that's a film. Even Leo and all of us were still like, no, we'll never have more fun in a movie probably our entire lives.
No, there's no chance.
Yeah, it was just that movie is just like a special fun. Let's just go crazy and have a blast film and just please capture whatever you can capture. But truthfully, every job that I go into, you know, I always drink, if you per se, drink the Kool-Aid. I'm like, this movie's going to be incredible. You got to go all in, because, you know, you're going to be doing so much work and preparing so hard to make whatever your part in the movie great. So I was never more prepared for a film. I graduated college with a finance degree, so I knew that world very well. Actually, when I auditioned for the movie, it was the audition was to pitch the monologue. We had to do that monologue of pitching a stock. So I ended up, I'm like, the only way I'm going to get this job, I'm going to make up my own monologue. So I wrote my own monologue, which was, I really feel like that got me over the hump. And then once Marty knew that I knew about the finance world, I'll never forget, like, the first day showing up to rehearsal is actually just me, Leo, and Marty, because he wanted to have me there to, like, rehearse with Leo, but also be able to explain what was going on. So that probably was the scariest, most intense, bizarre, holy shit, I have a place at the table moment I've ever had in my life. I just cursed on your show.
It's fine. You're fine. You're fine.
I only curse in front of my children. So,
yeah. And I feel like one of the kids right now.
So, anyway, but so that movie I was so prepared for. And then, you know, having, you know, Leo is such an amazing actor in the sense that, like, he's so in the zone and focused, where it's just like when they say action, this whole thing changes in him, where it's like this tidal wave is about to, like, erupt and come at you, and you're either going to ride the wave with him, or you're just going to get destroyed. So, like, it's just so awesome to say action, and Leo's like, here we go, and we're all just like, let's fucking go, you know, let's rip this. And then on the other extreme, and the other end of this amazing moment, you've got Marty Scorsese, who not only is, like, technically, visually, fundamentally, you know, one of the greatest directors, I feel, of all time, he's also a great coach, if you will. You know those great coaches that, you know, don't make the moment too big, but they do give every player on that team the confidence to go, you're going to throw this touchdown to that guy, and we all believe in you. And, you know, I really felt like I was the receiver at all moments that goes, we need to win this big game, and I completely believe in you that you're going to catch that big touchdown. And that's one of his greatest gifts as well. So every time, every take, you know, for 6 months of shooting, I had so much confidence. And part of that too was, like, making Coach, like, giggle, like making Marty giggle off in the distance. That's some, like, not only, you know, hearing my kids laughing giggle is magical, like making Marty Scorsese laugh is sort of a magical moment in your life as well.
That 6 months of shooting and to be around all that great talent, it only makes everybody better. You know, iron sharpens iron, or whatever it is. Steel sharpens. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying.
You're doing great. But Brad Gilmore, ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio.
But that's all I said. Okay, I'm gonna try to get that. I want to book that job next year.
We'll do it
together. I don't want to take anyone's job away, but maybe we'll just do it together in stereo.
You know, yeah, in stereo. Oh, that would be nice. You know, coming from both directions. But when in that 6 months, and this is actually a serious question, because I always love it when I hear actors talk about guys like Martin Scorsese or Robert De Niro. Well, I can tell that they have some sort of, you know, interpersonal relationship with them when they drop Marty, when they say, oh, you know, Marty. Or Bobby, or Bob, right? When did you feel comfortable enough to call Martin Scorsese Marty? Or was it like a right out the gate thing? Were you just vibing? Were y'all vibing right out the gate?
That's a great question. I mean, like, mentally, you're never okay with saying, like, so saying, like, I bow to you, sir. Whatever you're like, I will never. But I feel like he, like, you're, it's such a bonding buddy thing. I think he wants you to have that, especially when you're working, to have that really bonding buddy, we're pals, let's, you know, win this together. But you're still very deferential to the big guy at all times, and just being pro. And I mean, magical things, if you ever were on the set, you know, those scenes of like 400 extras, it's just craziness. When Marty walks on the set, it is like dead silence. Like, we are here to work. We are here to kick ass. We are here to, like, listen to your every word. And, you know, 400 or 500 people are like, you can hear a pin drop. And that alone is sort of raising this energy of, like, when you call action, we're going to just blow the lid off this thing. So, and that's kind of every take. When he's on set, it's just like, we are here to work. We're here to focus. This is a special time. It costs a lot of money, and a lot of stuff had to happen to get us all here together.
Yeah, I can just only imagine That's what I wanted to ask. That's the same thing I asked Rob Reiner, just what the vibe on set was, and y'all knew that this had to be a magical thing. And really, though, there was another movie that came out that I wanted to talk to you about, and of course we're going to be talking about the film The World Without You, and I want to know kind of your involvement there and what drew you to that project. But Bombshell, I thought, was another great movie.
Yeah.
I thought Bombshell was great. You played Neil Cavuto in Bombshell. But I thought that was another great movie, especially Charlize's transformation was pretty shocking, right? I mean, she had everything down. The voice was down. The look was down. Was it odd when she would turn the corner and you're like, oh, wait, is that Megyn Kelly or is that Charlize Theron?
I thought it was Megyn Kelly, yes.
Yeah.
I think I still to this day will bet Megyn Kelly showed up to play herself in Bombshell. No, that movie. So that's another. Jay Roach is another.
He's great. Yeah.
Fantastic director. I've done multiple movies with him. That's another thing to campaign, work hard,
right?
And be great and stay classy and just, you know, and just always put your best foot forward. Because then in Hollywood, you just want to know, it's like, is it hard? Like, people want to work with you again. You know, and I always tell everyone, look, just tell the truth, be classy, and you will go very far in this business on top of obviously working very hard. So Jay Roach, that was a movie, like anything Jay Roach touches, I think is gold. And he's another one of those, that seems to be the sort of like common denominator. These great directors, they don't say a ton. It's critical who they pick to cast. And then they give you all the confidence in the world to go out and kick butt. But, you know, as a father of, you know, originally, now I've just had a son, but two girls, you know, I sprinted to do that movie because, you know, you just hope that there's a day where no one's, you know, women are not getting objectified and sort of tortured in a way by going to work every day. So I hope when my girls are older, this will be a non-issue, ideally.
Is it odd, though, to play a real-life figure who's still currently doing what they're known for?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, like, how 100%. Do you approach that?
It's you have to block it out. You can't like or dislike the person. You just have to truly try to become the essence of who that person is. You know, and there's things that Neil Cavuto actually stands up. You're like, no, my God, Neil Cavuto is the only guy sort of speaking the truth to power right now on Fox News. My wife is from Waterbury, Connecticut. I found out that Neil Cavuto is from Waterbury, Connecticut, and which is interesting because he has this sort of eloquent, you know, presence. But there is a little bit of that Waterbury accent in his voice. So but you just have to become that person and be honest and true to that person. And not like or dislike them in any way that sort of like takes over your choices.
I just always think, I mean, it's easy somewhat, not easy, but I think it's easier to place an historical figure or somebody of prominence who is from yesteryear or days gone by, right? To where you can kind of make it more in your image. But this is a person that however many million Americans still see on a daily basis or are going to be very judgmental about your performance one way or another, right?
Totally.
Especially when it's someone who is tied to politics. As a performer, do you ever shy away from stuff like that? I know that this, for the story and the messaging of the film and working with Jay, those are all reasons to do it. But with the divisiveness in the country just in the last several years, do you ever shy away from material like that?
Well, there's two things. One, I think I sort of run to that, if you will. You know, a family member of mine was governor of New Jersey, Brendan Byrne. And then he got my mother into politics. You know, she was Jim Flores' press secretary. She was Bill Bradley's chief of staff. She helped him run for president. So, you know, there was a time in my life where I was ideally going to go finance, and go, you know, go work on Wall Street and then maybe find my way into politics. I think that was sort of predetermined by my family to do that.
Wow.
But then, you know, I had no idea I had the ability to sort of do what I do. Thank God I found this out that, you know, that I can act. That happened later in college is sort of a whim. So I'm not afraid of leaning into politics in any sense of the word. I think it's important. We're all Americans. We all have a voice. We all should be heard, whether you're red, blue, or independent, what have you. You know, everyone, just like we're learning now, everybody's votes counts. Everyone's voice should be heard. That's why these great Americans fought in wars throughout, you know, American history to make sure that everybody, you know, has a say in who their elected officials are. So I don't run from any of that. And it doesn't, for me, when it comes to choosing a movie in Hollywood, is the script good? Is this a story that needs to be told? Do people need to hear this? You know, I've done movies from like about Lou Gehrig's disease to, you know, it literally runs the gamut to politics, to women being abused, to everything, to, you know, reporters, in this movie in particular, the reporters being killed in Iraq. So it's really about the material, and does society need to hear the story? Because if we're not, you know, shining a light on these stories and people being downtrodden upon, like, I don't know who is, the news cycle is so fast today, and we are so partisan that we were all in our camp so hardcore that, like, I'm a Giants fan. I could give a shit about a Philly fan. Screw you, what have you. We can't live like that, and we are so much more similar than we are different. And sadly enough, I think in sort of like the 2000s, there was some sort of political manager or, you know, political guru that said, we don't need to fight for the middle anymore to kind of get everybody on the same page. We just have to make sure our team shows up to vote. So once that moment happened, we became so crazy partisan that we're not even communicating on a rational end. And we're just, you know, playing in fear, and we're stoking fires, and no one's having real conversations anymore. Because I have dear friends, I'm a Democrat, I'm happy to say that, but I have dear friends who are Republicans and family members who are Republicans.
Right.
That they'll give you the shirt off their back. But when you all of a sudden were talking about politics and things that just seem so fundamentally like normal to me, it's like, you know, we've just gone off the rails. It's wild to me that we can't have these normal, calm, rational conversations. And, you know, you don't have to be a Democrat or Republican to decide where do you stand on this issue. Just, and don't listen to Fox News. Don't listen to MSNBC. I just want to know where you stand and how you feel about this.
Yeah, it's difficult for people, though, to do that, to have the nuance in conversation and opinion. I think that it's a lost art form that we don't seem to try to even possess anymore. And I think that, you know, do you remember the Seinfeld bit where he would talk about when you would root for sports teams, you're really just rooting for laundry? You know, you'd be like,
I don't,
you know,
remember that. No,
so
I
you would talk about you're just rooting for the shirt. You don't, you know, yeah. The guy in the shirt could change teams next week,
yes.
And now you hate that guy. You're just rooting for the guy in the shirt. And I really feel like that's how politics are, though, right?
Well, that's exactly it.
Yeah, it's just we're rooting for the guy who's wearing our team colors, and, you know, and then if he switches teams, we don't like that guy anymore. We hate him. He's the epitome of evil now.
It's extraordinary. Extraordinary that's the world we live in, and we're also capable of easily finding ways to hate that guy, and some PR person can come up with some great, you know, new little quick one-liners to take that guy out because now he plays for Philly and he's not on the Giants anymore.
100%. But let's talk about the world without you. I had Chris.
It's been a hard world without you, Brad. It's been,
I know.
You know, that you're
I know.
Not
I've
here.
Really changed your life in this 30-minute interaction that we've had, and you'll forever remember me.
I love you.
But
I love
thank you.
So
I love you too. But I had Chris Mulkey on the show, and we were talking about the film as well, and, you know, what another great individual and great actor who's done so many great things. But
maybe the best human in the world.
Gosh,
truly.
Great guy. He was actually the only person He was actually the only person that ever made me cry on an airplane, Chris Mulkey. That's a true story. Yeah,
what?
From an acting performance. It's a long thing. I'll get to it. It ties into the opium addiction, but we'll talk about it later.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about it later. That's at 2:35.
Yep.
But for you, The World Without You, it's a really important message, an important film. And I know you kind of already talked about what drew you to it, but can you tell the people a little bit of what the film is actually about?
It's about a family that is coming together 1 year after the death of you know, one of the siblings or one of the children. He was a reporter in Iraq, and he was murdered. And it's sort of the one-year anniversary that the parents are bringing the kids home. There's three daughters. I'm married to one of the daughters. And over that weekend, we're really just trying to unwind all our problems and all our issues because, you know, once a tragic moment happens in families, just like it's happening now with the pandemic, you know, sadly, a lot of people have a lot of empty seats at their table because of COVID. And I sadly think it's gonna go on for quite some time. But you really take in of like who you are, what you believe in, what you stand for, and who the people are that are very close to you, and you know, it triggers and opens up a lot of things, and that's sort of what the movie sort of attacks, if you will.
And how hard is it? Because I asked Chris the same question. I'm just always fascinated by it. When you spend all this time making a film and you get attached to these characters as if they were real people, in your case, you know, obviously there's real connections there. How do you, whenever the director yells cut, you're done for the day, you get to go home, how do you get out of the feelings that you go through as an actor on a set when the material's so heavy? I mean, if you're in something like a comedy of some sort or Wolf of Wall Street where you have a little bit more fun, I think it might be a little bit easier sleep at night. But when you have these really hard issues that you're dealing with, how do you kind of divorce yourself from the feelings of the character?
Well, one, you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad I went all the way there and I got it out and they captured it. So that's what I want to do. Just the fundamental work of it. So it's like, I threw the touchdown, they caught it, game over, I'm out. But I'll take it to another level. Sometimes to go there, to get that heavy, and these moments are so intense, and these feelings of loss are so big, and you want to make sure that you're completely present and you're showing your true inner self. I've killed my wife a lot. My wife has died in my mind. I think that's a joke, but like, you have to like really go like, this is some heavy stuff. You know, there's loss. Now, I don't really, you know, I don't have a family member that was a reporter that, you know, went to Iraq. And, you know, there's some times where I can trick my brain, and there's, you know, times in that show where like in the movie where I can go there and it's okay. But there's other times where you're like, it's freezing outside, it's so cold, I'm not thinking about all the stuff. So I need a quick like plug in of emotion right now. And my poor wife, who I love dearly, you will obviously know this, that like I have to imagine something horrible happened to my poor wife to like get in these like very intense, you know, get these feelings drawn up and these moments so they can be captured on camera at, you know, 4:32 a.m. in the morning, standing outside on a street in New York City, and it's 12 degrees out. Like, that's another thing you got to remember. And there's 300 people, and something happened, and the camera broke, and we were supposed to shoot this 4 hours ago, but now we find ourselves here. So, like, they don't care that, like, whether you have it or not. Like, just have it when at 4:32 a.m., action. I need to see a lot of stuff from you. So, like, there's different ways to get in there, but it's hard to unwind things that you're like, oh my God, my poor wife, I love her. But that's just becoming a pro in moments of like, okay, we did it, good. Jamie, I love you. What's up? Call her on the phone. There she is.
Yeah. well, first of all, your poor wife.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But I can understand just all the emotions you have to put yourself through just to get to that, like you said, 4:32 a.m., this is my time to shine. I can't mess up now. So many people are counting on me, and you know we don't have. And it might be one of those things where, like you said, you're running behind time, and you only have one or two takes at all to get it done.
That happens a lot too. Like the sun setting, it's a beautiful shot. We got to get it now, or we're getting kicked out of the space. There's so many versions of that nobody knows when they're watching a movie.
Yeah,
they have no idea.
And you know, I'm sure whenever you're watching the film on premiere night or you're screening it in your home, you're like, oh, and babe, this is where I was thinking about killing you. This is where the sun was setting, and then we had
you
to do
died
it three
of cancer
or four times.
Right here. You had cancer. the car accident.
Just so you know where these mental signposts were.
This one, you just lost an arm. Lost an arm, and I wasn't totally, you know, beat up. I was like, well, we'll rehab. I know there's some great technology now. We'll find a way.
If you just got to well up a little bit, maybe she stubs her toe. There's like maybe a hand nail or something.
Yeah, well, stub the toe. I could give a shit about it.
Well, definitely everyone go check out The World Without You. I know we're having fun, but it is a really serious topic and stuff that I think people really need to go out and see. And I want to ask PJ, what do you have next up? I know you're now a new father, so maybe are you slowing down the projects right now, or are you going to speed it up because now you have three mouths?
No, you know what? When you have three kids, you work like it's crazy. So everything sort of started up working again in Hollywood because we started testing very well. So literally the day my son was born, I had to go to work. The day was born. They were amazing. I haven't even started the show yet, and they were so great. That was All Rise. I'm going to recur on that. And then literally went to Never Have I Ever. And now I'm going to do another French show called Ghosts, a pilot for that. And then I'm going to go back and do The Boys. And then there's another Amazon show coming out that is going to be epic, that one of my buddies is the showrunner, David Matthews. It's called Them Covenant. That's a heavy show. That's going to be on Amazon. So there's a lot coming out. There's a lot happening, and there's a lot of work to be done still. Yeah. I got to pay for three kids. I live in L.A.
That's a lot,
very
man.
Very expensive. Very expensive.
Lot. It's a lot.
I got to make up for 8 months, you know, of not working. So dad's right. Got to get back to work.
Yeah, and obviously The Boys has been such a massive success for Amazon, and I'm sure for yourself. Everybody, that critically and commercially, seems to be a successful one. I'm sure it feels nice to be on a show like that.
It's great. Well, those are like the greatest, loveliest, most beautiful people, and that cast is, you know, I came on season two. That cast loves each other. And that's one of those casts, too, that goes to work to kill and kick butt. And I was lucky enough to know some of the cast members as, like, buddies before. So that's always nice to show up to a set and, you know and have your pals there already.
Well, PJ, I feel like we could do this all day.
Brad, you're my new best friend.
I feel like we really bonded.
Get out to L.A. No, I'm telling you.
I feel like we bonded.
I just texted your parents while we were on and be like, you know what? We don't need the intervention anymore. He's doing great.
Thank you. I'm glad that we were able to cancel that. I feel like this was more therapeutic for me than it was for you. So I appreciate that. Why don't you let the people know, if they want to get in contact and have these kind of conversations with you, how could they find what PJ's doing? Where could they find him on the social sites?
Well, on the social sites,
yes.
Brad Gilmore.
ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio. That's so good. So good. I want someone to say, PJ Byrne.
You know what would have been great? If I could have had, like, you know, God rest his soul, if I could have had the Macho Man Randy Savage do it.
Oh.
Do you know how awesome that would have been?
Have you seen David Arquette's documentary?
I have. So I work in wrestling as well. So we've run into David a lot. And that David Arquette Will Not Die, I think it's what it's called.
You cannot kill David Arquette.
You cannot kill David Arquette. I'm sorry. Yes.
Son of a bitch. You son
of a bitch. I know. He's going to be so upset. But it was so great. And David really won the wrestling world back over after that. You know, just an incredible soul, an incredible journey.
Because you know what? That makes me so happy, because Dave became a really good friend of mine, and he might be the most pure of heart person I know on the planet. And he just cares about people and, you know, and working hard and getting out there and just making his family smile. So that movie, to me, I feel like everyone should see that and love Dave as much as I do, because he's really a special person.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, go watch Ready to Rumble if you've never seen it. It's still funny. The movie still holds up. I love Ready to Rumble.
Yes.
So, yeah, let the people know where they can find you, though. Did you already say that?
Oh, yeah. PJ _ Byrne, BYRNE, on Instagram, and I think it's the same thing on Twitter. And then it's just a lot of pictures of me and Brad. There's a lot
yes.
of pictures of us.
Yes, together, because we are now best friends. PJ, I really appreciate you taking the time, man. Make sure everyone out there, go see The World Without You. Go find it. Go stream it. Go watch it. It needs to see. You need to see it, and it needs to see you.
It needs to see you as well. Brad, you're so good at this, man. 7 years, no problem. You're crushed. This is going to go for 86 more years.
Well, I hope
so. Yeah, I want to see you on ESPN TV, though. Primetime. Let's go.
Let's do it.
I'm going to make
a call. I feel like you and I, there's a show that you and I need to pitch. I don't know what it is, but I feel like
I'll
you and
call.
I. Let's just make it happen.
Podcast, something. We'll chat
together.
Something.
PJ, I appreciate it so much. Make sure everyone out there go see The World Without You. That's Mr. PJ Byrne. PJ,
cheers.
Again, I appreciate it.
I love you, Brad. Have a good one.